often on this show, we allude to the past or returning to our roots. We talk about heritage skills and just how our ancestors moved through life. So that's a common topic, but I've realized that one area of that I haven't really directly addressed is how you can use your past, your family's legacy, your family's history, and really draw on that for inspiration and motivation as you yourself move into a more old-fashioned life. So I think this is a really interesting topic. I have kind of mixed experiences with this, which I will share as we get into this conversation, but I'm so thrilled to have a woman who knows this inside and out and is a beautiful example of living it in real time. So I have Dolores Taranto with me today. You've may have come across her over on Instagram. She is a writer, a podcaster, a photographer who explores creating beauty by hand, old world style, ancestral traditions, and of course, food. We're going to talk about food today because, I mean, how can we not talk about food? She's a daughter, a wife, a mother, and likes to write about those things too. So I had the privilege of being on Dolores's podcast, I think it was last year. We just hit it off. Like, it was the best conversation. And it was one of those interviews where I got off of it. I'm like, I just like her. We could be friends in real life. So she's on my podcast today. And we are going to talk about this topic and do a deep dive. So welcome, Dolores. So happy to have you.
Jill, thank you so much for having me. And I, of course, felt the same way. That's one of the wonderful things about doing a show like this is you can have people that you really want to meet on your show, and then you can become friends with them. It's like,
exactly.
It's like the dirty little secret of podcasting. You know, like I'm doing it, yes, to put great conversations out for our listeners, but also it's selfish.
Totally. And I said that. I'm like, they're like, thank you for this content. I'm like, it's really a selfish motivation, but you're welcome. You're welcome.
Well, what I really like too is I feel as though, you know, looking at our two platforms and approaches, we are coming at the same thing from different angles. And I love connecting with people like that when you realize like, we're just saying the same thing differently.
Yes, me too.
In our own
especially,
ways.
Yeah, because I mean, I love being with homesteaders who are just like me, of course, but I love to find those same themes, like you said, in those different realms, those different niches, same thing said differently. That's just always fun because it just brings a fresh perspective that you may not have had otherwise.
Perfectly said. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just going to dive in and see where this takes us. Cause this isn't one of those topics that is a how to 1, 2, 3, here are the steps. It's very much, I feel like lots of nuance and lots of little angles and rabbit holes we can go down.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I feel like sometimes I sit and I think that maybe I need like a 1, 2, 3 step, something to hand people because I don't really have that. But yeah, I feel then I circle back to, I think the stuff that I talk about is kind of so it's like the intangible side of the tangible.
Absolutely.
So there's perhaps not a pamphlet I can give you. I think I like to think that my angle is like to inspire you to dig more into the kind of spiritual side of a lot of the things that you talk about, for instance.
Yes.
Again, same thing, different angle.
Yeah. And I think, at least in my experience, there's certain topics that when you do try to make them 1, 2, 3, they almost cheapens them and they lose their meaning. And I think this may be one of those. Not that you couldn't systematize parts.
I'd like that.
You know, but yeah.
I'm going to use that. And can I apologize to your YouTube watchers if this video is really dark? As I was telling you, I'm in New York and it just like a darkness just cast over the day right when we were sitting down to record. And so all my lighting is like way off and it's just pouring rain outside.
I still think yours looks better than mine. I feel like I'm a little green today. Like the lighting
and
is
I'm
green.
I'm really red.
And you're red. So we're all the colors of the spectrum today.
Both of us are unhappy right now.
We're not good with the video. Just don't watch the video. Go listen to the audio. Don't look at us. Please do not look at us.
Love that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. We love technology. Okay. So
where do you want to start?
I was looking at your, I think it was your blog or sorry, your podcast, website, which we're going to give that. It's the Bella Figura podcast. Mm-hmm. Did I say it right?
So
probably
you said it, you said it right for like an English pronunciation. So it would be Bella Figura in Italian, you would say Figura, bellafigurapodcast.com. And, if you want me to take a second to explain what that means, Bella Figura.
Yes.
So Bella Figura is a, as a old popular phrase in Italian that literally translated means like beautiful figure, but really is used more as a good presentation. And so I'm the daughter of two Italian immigrants, and growing up, I would hear a lot, you know, if you're heading out, you're going to do something, nufa a brutta figura, which would be like an ugly presentation. So it was about presenting yourself well to the world. And so my platform is kind of based on how do we live our lives in a way that is basically the most beautiful form of how we can live them. You know, it's not about presenting a front to people, right? Or a facade, or trying to get people's approval. It's about taking care of yourself, your family, the land, your body, the food you eat, the world around you, your spirit in a beautiful, like, you know, the most beautiful way you can, because you recognize that all of those things are gifts that you've been given. And so you should handle them with the utmost love and respect. So that's where that comes from.
I just got chills also. Mm, so
I appreciate
so
that.
I've been speaking a lot to this online. In the homestead circles, not as beautifully as you said it, but in my own way. But just like,
it's pretty close. As beautiful as I said it.
A little more poetic.
You're pretty eloquent, yes.
But I feel like there's such a shift right now in homesteading. And I've done podcast episodes on this, so we don't have to like belabor, you know, beat the dead horse. But there's so much fear around food production and, you know, homestead stuff right now. I'm like, we don't have to do this out of fear. In fact, when you do it out of fear, it kind of produces inferior results. And you can do it out of love, and you can do it for appreciation of beauty. And that's actually gonna like sustain you longer than just like the sky is falling. And I think you just summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, I've seen you talk about that, where you mentioned basically, if I'm picking up what you're saying correctly, that you're not coming at homesteading specifically as like a political act or because you're a prepper. You're coming at it from an angle that it gives you like a depth to life, like a richness.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's soul filling.
Yes, yes.
And that's as good of a reason to do it as any.
I agree.
It's a wonderful reason to do it.
It's good enough. It's enough.
It's
you
good
don't
enough.
Have to, you don't have to come up with anything else. You don't have to create anything else. Like, that's enough. It reminds me of, you read Wendell Berry?
Yes.
Okay. Of course you do. That's,
love him.
The quote, I'm sure you've run across it, but when work is done for love of the place where it is done, of the materials, the artistry, and the product of the work, of the people it is done with and for, then the sign or evidence of it will be beauty.
Yes. And I don't know if this is from the same essay, but I just moved my camera. Hold on. He has also a wonderful passage. I'm forgetting from what essay that I love, where he basically talks about where there is, you know, kind of darkness and things are run down and things are not taken care of. That is how we know there's illness, because there is no beauty.
Oh, yes.
I paraphrased his quote, which definitely more eloquent than what I just said.
Well, you know, we can't ever be quite as eloquent as Wendell.
Remembering it on the fly, in agreement. And I think, you know, that kind of reason, that kind of thing in the back of at people's head where they're saying, you know, maybe beauty isn't a good enough reason, right? Or like depth of daily life, like a richness, is this idea that we have, at least in our society, that everything has to be useful.
Yeah.
Right? So like, if you're not doing it for something tangible, if you just do it because it fills you up, it's kind of not good enough. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think, and I've been kind of just digging into that idea of where it came from very recently. So I don't feel like I have a lot of really depth around it, but also this idea that this idea of ultra productivity, which I get a little bit bristly when people start talking about that. Cause I'm like a checklist girl. I love getting a lot done. I'm wired hot.
Yeah.
Like I like to
you look
get,
like
I like
you get
to
a lot
do
done
a lot,
in a day. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just like live for that. It makes me feel so good. It's not to impress someone or to like prove my worth. It's just, I love it. I'm wired like that. But they're saying that idea, that kind of modern sense that if something isn't for productivity and only practical, it kind of is like this, it came from the Puritan mindset. that mm-hmm. of the first colonies, where that was very much their ideas of how they viewed the world. And it's not necessarily how the whole world sees that. And if we can recognize that's where that came from and maybe take pieces of it, leave pieces of it. But I thought that was a really interesting concept that I've hadn't heard
it before. Makes sense to me. I mean, it would also make sense if you look at, for instance, like a place like Italy. I would not say when you think of Italy, you think productivity.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really, it's not an attribute of Italian culture or a major attribute for good or ill. I would think you think America when you think massive yes. productivity, right?
Yes.
And so what do we get when we look at a European culture like Italy or like France? We get this whole thing that so many Americans desire, right? And love. It's just la dolce vita, you know, and a slow life, a sweet life, savoring life, living slowly, taking time to be with our families, taking time to be with our friends. It's a different angle.
It is. And I think that's what, yeah, so many Americans are drawn to that. Like, wow, this is novel. This is like such a concept.
Yeah.
And you guys were like, yeah, we've been doing it for a long time like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a trade-off though. I, you know, in the circle of Italians that I run with between like family and friends, you know, you see the discrepancy between your family in Italy. You know, there's always in immigrant communities, the ones left behind, right? And the ones who left. And you hear like, yes, we have the things, the beautiful houses, the yes. cars, but our lives reflect that, our level of like stress and how much we're always going, going, going. And then when I go visit my family there, yeah, they don't have the things, but they have the pace, they have the yes. beauty, they have the good food. Food is a whole topic too on the, yes. you know, the, how food is made, how it's grown in a place like Italy versus here. Absolutely. So it's a trade-off.
It is. And you have to, even just living in America, you have to ask yourself, like, how much life are you trading for the yeah. things you're chasing? I mean, maybe the answer is
so well said.
Maybe it's not. You have to answer that for yourself.
Yeah. I think a lot of what I'm always trying to get to between like writing and Instagram, Substack, podcast, is I'm trying to get, like, if I have like Italian life here or, you know, that kind of slow living in a bucket here, and then the society I live in, I'm just trying to like take ladles of this and keep like adding it to the society that I live in. And like that part of me that is so American, right? You're just trying to add it yes. in.
Yes. I love the ladle analogy. That
I just came up
visual.
With it.
Well, it's good. Write it down. It's good.
So I actually, this is a little bit off topic, maybe not, but I actually just started reading a book that is perfect timing because I was just thinking you would probably love it. It's a book about rewilding.
Oh,
have you
what's
heard
it called?
This idea? You know, I had a feeling you were going to ask me that and I didn't write it down.
The hardest thing when people ask me, what are you reading right now? I'm like, a lot of things and I can't remember any of them. So thank you for asking.
I don't remember. I can text it to you later.
Well, but, yeah, we can stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's about, I just started reading it, but are you familiar with this topic?
Vaguely.
Yeah. Oh,
vaguely.
Good. That makes me feel better because so am I. I kind of have heard it, but I don't really know this much about it, but it's like homesteading taken to the next level. And it's all about a movement of people who are like trying to, for basically a lot of the same reasons that people like you and I are kind of turned off by modern society or like the things that concern us, but like where you and I might say, okay, well, let's go back to ancestral ways of eating, ancestral ways of cooking, maybe have some land, gardens, preserving all the things, animals. These people are going literally like back into the woods.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And like building fires, making tools with sticks. The chapter I was just reading this morning, she was talking about how she like was with her daughters and pulled off on the side of the road because they saw a dead fox and she wanted to get the dead fox to take it home to skin it and eat it. I'm like, whoa, like yeah. it's a
next
book
level.
That it's a book that I'm like, I shouldn't be reading this because the next thing you know, I'm going to be,
yeah.
I'm going to be in the middle of some forest trying to build my own tent.
Yeah. You know? But there is something to that. Like I haven't read the book, which I know I want to.
I'll send you the name. Yeah.
I think maybe this is the progression of homesteaders, as we start off little weird and then we get real weird. Like,
exactly.
Maybe where we're headed.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've been spending more time in the mountains lately. And I've just, because I've always been like the prairie person, homestead, farmstead. Right. That's been my vibe. And just, but being there, it's like it's very primal. And it's made me go, oh, there's something here. Like, we have a lot of fires up there, you know, campfires, and there's a lot more wild animals than I have here on the prairie, and things are just rough and rugged. And I'm like, this speaks to a different part of me, and I really like it.
Oh boy.
So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with that, but
this book is going to hit, it's going to hit that spot.
Yeah.
Where you feel, I feel terrible. We're talking about a book that I don't have the name to right now.
It's all right. It's just a book, guys.
I have a 5-month-old and a 4-year-old. So I don't remember many things these days, but yeah, I think it's an interesting next step. And that's kind of what appealed to me. Just as we're talking about some of the, I guess, drawbacks of not only American society, but modern society, you know, and how we're kind of trying to ladle in alleviations to that.
Yes. Which is actually the perfect segue to my first question for you, which you didn't even know.
You haven't even asked a question
yet. Not an official question. We've had some questions, but not like on my list. We got to go to, you're my checklist girl.
Perfect. I love this.
All right. So I was looking on your podcast website and I found this quote and I loved it. And you say, perspective from the past can help loosen modernity's grip on your life. Hmm. Love that. So the first thing, I just want to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Please.
And ask you, if someone is listening to that, they're like, cool, cool, pretty words. Why loosen the grip of modernity in the first place? Like, why is that something that we should care about, think about, worry about? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. The first thing that just popped into my head is, Dolores, give a succinct answer and don't go like don't on and on.
That's boring.
Because it's an unpackable topic. I think my first answer to that person would be, if you don't feel like you need to loosen the grip of modernity, then you don't need this.
Mm, yeah.
That would probably be my first answer, right? Yeah. I think it's more for the people who feel like they're doing all the things that they have been taught they should do, and they're living in this way that they have been taught they should live.
Yes.
Maybe they're successful. Maybe they're wealthy. You know, I live here in New York. There is a whole lot of that. There's a whole lot of keeping up with the Joneses. And quite honestly, you don't even realize you're in it. You don't even know that that's what's going on. You just know you're really tired all the time. You're really overwhelmed all the time. You feel like something's missing. For the work that I do, I find a lot of people come to me, they're in their late 30s, early 40s, they've maybe just had a child, and they're looking at their children now, and they're remembering their own childhood, they're remembering this kind of extended family unit they used to have, they remember the traditions, the rituals, and how much that filled their lives, and they're realizing, like, my kids are not going to have that. And of course, it breaks their hearts. And what they want to do is bring back some of their cultural ties, some of their traditions, so that their children can have that experience. So those are people who are basically saying, without really maybe knowing it, that they want to loosen the grip of modernity on their lives. Because modernity says you don't have time for traditions, right? Modernity says you don't have time to slow down and do the work that tradition actually demands.
Yes.
And so, did I answer the question?
You did. Yeah.
Fully?
Okay. No, that was good.
I can add more, but
I think that piece you said about the thing people feel, and I've seen that in people, I felt it in myself. It feels so mysterious. And I'm always like, what triggers that to appear in some people? And others, they never feel it. And I'm like, are they too sedated? Is it just not for them? I'm the type of person, like, if I find something really good, I want everybody to try it. Like, I just have that personality. And so it's hard on me, especially with people close to me, like family, where I'm like, guys, look at our life. Like, look at the cool things. Look how fulfilled we are. And they're like, nah, I'm good, bro. And it's just like so hard on me. So I'm like, what does it take to wake someone up? Why do some people wake up and others don't? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do think some people are maybe just not wired for the things that you and I are wired for. I do think there's an element to that. And then I think if you like almost imagine it like stairs, you know, like you go down one level and there's the people who are like, something's off, but I'm never going to look at that.
Yes.
I just can't, you know? And then there's the next level. People are like, something is off and I have to figure it out. And I am a strong believer that once you get to that step, people like me and you come into your life.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Because you've put it out into the universe. God's heard you. And now you're going to be sent things that will get you on the path to find what it is you're missing. Like to actually identify that, yeah, that feeling is a hole inside of your spirit. Mm-hmm. And here are some of the remedies that are calling to you.
Yes. Well said.
And then there's some of us who, you know, you keep going. I feel like you keep going down that rabbit hole and then you're reading books about rewilding and debating. And debating moving into the forest.
Exactly. I'm interrupting this episode for just a second to tell you about a homesteading event that may be near you. And if it is, you definitely gotta go. It's the second annual Modern Homestead Conference in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And before I tell you more, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that I can't attend and I am so bummed. I just couldn't make the dates work this year. But the good news is there are a ton of other amazing speakers and experts that you are going to learn so much from. Joel Salatin will be there. Lisa from Farmhouse on Boone. She's been here on my podcast. Homesteading Family, Sally Fallon, Jess from Roots and Refuge, and tons more. They'll also have Dr. Temple Grandin doing a very special talk this year. I got to see her last year and she was amazing. So this two-day event features presentations for both beginner and advanced homesteaders. There's topics like food preservation, seed saving, animal husbandry and processing, fire and homestead preparedness, herbalism, how to build a strong community, and that is just scratching the surface. So if you've never attended an event like this, trust me, it's really worth it to make some time and go. You're going to see these things in real life, in person, which will fast track your learning so much more. Plus, there's just nothing like getting to rub shoulders with people who are like-minded and doing all the weird and crazy things that you and I like to do. So get your tickets now. They're still for sale and you can grab them over at modernhomesteading.com. And that's where we go next, y'all.
So careful. No, actually, people are listening to your show are probably way past that. They're down the steps.
For sure. I feel like most of the people here, I'm like, they're super weird like I am. And you are the good weird. So I feel like they get it. They get us. So yeah. Okay, so my second part of that question from your quote, again, just in case listeners forgot, it was perspective from the past can help loosen majority's grip on your life. What perspectives from your past do you think have been the most valuable for you as you have started getting into this lifestyle and this mindset?
Two things came to mind right away when you asked that question. The first was I grew up, as I mentioned before, the daughter of two immigrants from Southern Italy. And that old world way of life was homesteading before homesteading was homesteading, or I guess like the new modern homesteading, and was green before there was a green movement. And that is a perspective that has really, that really shaped me. I may have not always embraced it. I may have not have always cared for it. You know, I grew up as a quote unquote modern girl in New York. It was like Madonna on the TV and all of those kind of things. So I didn't always appreciate it, but it's definitely a perspective that has shaped me. And the second thing that came to mind was that the pride in my heritage, the pride in my ancestral heritage that my family instilled, also is a perspective that has shaped me. And, you know, we could talk about what is that thing that people feel like they're missing. And again, I think we're talking about the same missing piece, just from two different perspectives. So for me, I'm just coming at it saying, you know, a lot of people in America are third, fourth generation removed from the people who immigrated from the old world. So what happens in those generations is you lose ties to the language, the traditions, the food, the customs, the community, and then you end up wondering who you are because you actually literally you don't know. And that is what so many people are facing, I think, right now in our modern, quote unquote, modern society is, who am I? And so they're taking on all of these identities, trying all these different things out, often coming up lacking. And then what happens is there's depression, anxiety, followed quickly by prescriptions. If you look at the old world model for this, there's not too much of that because you had all of those things, right? You had the community, you had a shared, you know, way of doing things, you had tradition, and you had ritual. And we've lost all of that, and it shows. And I know I've gone a little bit off from your question, but having that perspective of coming from your ancestral culture gives you a sense of who you are that really makes you unshakable. It just imbues you and your life with a worth that roots you.
Absolutely. And yeah, beautifully said. And so true. And just seeing in different books I've read, just talking about kind of the malaise that's hitting our culture. And that's a huge piece is community. There are no ties. We don't honor our elders like we used to, which means we don't have that grounding effect. We don't know the stories. We don't understand where we came from.
Right.
I guess, again, I'm playing devil's advocate. As you're speaking, I'm thinking, yes, yes, yes. What would you say to someone who doesn't have that strong existing familial foundation, like you may have? Like, I don't. You know, I kind of feel like, I know I have family members who listen to this podcast, so I'm trying to be really respectful. And, you know, we've talked about this in person, so it's not like I'm...
just spit out my tea.
You know, yeah. Trying to be careful. But, you know, there was a lot of our family trees, not just mine, where you had some tradition, you had some legacy, and then not to point fingers at a certain generation, but that post-World War II generation, they kind of wanted to become more homogenized and cookie cutter. And I think a lot of stuff was lost there.
Yep.
So that's a long question, but what would your thoughts be for someone who's like, I don't have any legacy. I don't have a family with cool stories in it.
Right. Yeah, no, it's actually a great question. And there's like a couple hard truths there, right? Which is if you're too far down the assimilation road and all of your elders have passed away and nobody asked them the stories, they're probably lost. I mean, I don't have any 1-2-3-step method for that, right? Like, that's the problem. But if you still have an old aunt, an old uncle somewhere living on this earth, I mean, the first thing I recommend is you quickly start speaking to them. You would be amazed how much people want to talk about their lives if somebody just asks them. You know, and you don't know what stories will start coming out once you start asking them. But the fact of the matter is, at some point, I mean, you have a cultural, unless your family came over on the Mayflower, but even still, you probably came from England. You know, you have someone along the line left somewhere to come here to America. To give you a better shot at a different life, because they were probably starving. They were probably being persecuted politically, religiously. I mean, a whole host of things. Remind me the question again.
Oh, yeah. No, you were good. It's like, keep going.
It feels like I'm losing my train of thought.
Mm-hmm. No, you're good. I don't remember the question. I was just enraptured in your response. It was something like, what do you do when you don't have the legacy? Like,
thank you. What do you do when you don't have it? I should write down the questions these days. Okay. Yeah. What do you do when you don't have the legacy? So stories, gathering stories is the first thing. But if you can't start there or you don't feel like you have anyone who will give you that, you know, find out where you come from. So again, somewhere along the line, somebody left somewhere to come to America. And it could be, you know, the history books are a great resource for that. In the turn of the century, a lot of people came from Ireland. A lot of people came from Italy. That is like a really good place to start. You know, are your ancestors from places like that? So that, and then learn the traditions of those cultures and bring them as much as you can into your current life. I feel like the answer to that question depends on just kind of like how far removed you are. You know, if you're like literally starting from nothing, you're going to have a lot of like lifting to do. But let's say let's use an example. Let's say you do know that your family originally came from Scotland. What a beautiful country. I've never been there, but anything I read or see about Scotland sounds like an amazing cultural heritage. Appears to me to be a country that is still really beautiful. Like everywhere you go is pretty gorgeous. So Scotland has a very rich history that defines it, like most histories, defines its people, right? You have this idea of the Scots being very brave, almost warriors. So if I were you, I would learn more about that rich history, right? And then from there, I would look at the parts of myself that resonate with that, right? I mean, this is kind of like a very generic and like elementary example, but for clarity's sake, like what parts of you could use an infusion of like the warrior spirit? Where do you feel like in your life you could use some of that? And then you can draw on the fact that you likely come from ancestors who were brave like that, who were warriors, who had that spirit. So we can get into the field of epigenetics and actually like how a lot of that can be in your DNA. But even if you don't even want to go on that kind of like geeked out science route, it's part of your spirit. It literally, those people gave their bodies to create your body. So they're in you. So that is what I'm talking about when I say, here we are feeling weak. Like we don't have any access to strength or bravery, but we do. We have like a whole cultural heritage behind us that we can draw from and say, you know, I come from this line of people who were fighters. That fighting spirit is in me too.
I feel like it's so much like this whole homesteading life is that it's like, it's on you. If you want to resurrect it, if you want to learn the skills, if you want to figure out how to, you know, cure a ham or make sourdough, you have to go get it. And I think it's the same thing here. If you weren't passed down, I know there's a few handful of people in the homesteading movement who came from a rich heritage of homesteading. Most of us didn't. So we're figuring it out. And I think the same thing here is how you so beautifully put it is, you know, it's there. You just have to go uncover it. You might have to knock some dust off it. You might have to go put the responsibility on yourself to go find it, which I know this audience can do because they're good at doing it in every other area. Yeah.
So well said. And just to kind of dovetail off of what you just said, you know, for me, I don't homestead in the way that you do. I don't consider myself a homesteader. I just more feel like, again, like I ladle in a lot of old world sensibility into my daily life. I do have chickens and I do a lot of sourdough baking and a preserving and gardening. You know, I have a lot of the elements. But for me, you can also deepen your approach to homesteading. Okay, let me back up for a second. You just said, some people come from a very rich lineage of homesteading, but most of us don't. So you're starting from scratch and you might feel like to yourself that you're taking on a persona that doesn't belong to you, right? Or traditions and things that don't belong to you. The fact of the matter is I'm going to give you good odds that somewhere along the line in your lineage, probably not even that long ago, most of the people who created you we're doing homesteady things.
Good point. Yes. Good point.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not that far removed. So you can strengthen your conviction. You can strengthen your feeling like, I belong here. I belong doing this by connecting to those people. Even if you didn't know them, just being aware of their existence, right? It makes you feel like, I have a seat at this table. I come from these people.
That's such a great point. And, you know, and especially because I consider myself, when people are like, oh, your parents taught you this. I'm like, no, I grew up in a neighborhood in like a 90s foot level.
Right.
Like, I didn't have this, but as you were saying that, like, I have a picture of my great grandmother. I never met her on my desk. She homesteaded in Southeast Idaho. She rode horses. Yep. She was gritty as heck. Mm-hmm. And I often look at that and I'm like, I didn't know you, but I know a big piece of you is in me. And that, like you said, it does take care of that. Like, you don't have to feel like an imposter. You don't have to have this magical mantle bestowed upon you. Just take it. Just go get it. Go find it.
Perfect. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm getting at. You know, we talked about earlier in talking about like the grip of modernity. And I said something along the lines of, it's like, you don't even know you're in it. And I think you and I talked about this when you came on my show. You know, what the pandemic showed us was that there can be a tear in the fabric, mm-hmm. right? We are kind of living under this delusion that modernity is forever, that this way of living is forever. It's almost like it has this eternal feeling, like it always has been and always will be.
Yes.
And neither of those things are true. And the way that we are taught to live right now is really just an experiment. I mean, it's just what is happening right now. And I like to use the example of, I bake with sourdough, and I like to use einkorn as an ancient grain. And my mother, even though she grew up in Southern Italy, poor, with not much, she came here to America and she baked with Pillsbury bleached white flour and a yeast packet of instant yeast.
Yep.
Because, you know, and they told women then to not breastfeed. So she didn't breastfeed any of us, right? Like, all the modern things is what I'm getting at. Even though she came from the old world. But before her, like, generations of the women before her and before me baked in a communal, she's told me these stories. I'm lucky enough to know a lot of these stories. They had a communal brick oven outside of her house. They used a type of sourdough that they still use in Southern Italy. And everybody baked their bread together using that. So really, my mother and her modern approach is the blip. I am a continuation of the tradition.
That's a good way to think of it. That's a really good way to think of it. Yeah.
I'm glad that resonated.
Because I feel like it is easy to think, you know, our parents or our grandparents, if they kind of got off the track, that was the end all be all. But like you said, it's a blip. It's just a little, now we're back.
Yeah. I would almost say of course, I don't know your lineage, like, you know, by heart, we've talked about it, but I would almost say your 90s split level upbringing was the blip.
Yeah.
And before that, it was probably generations and generations of people who maybe, like, my ancestors didn't have homesteads, right? Living in Southern Italy, that's not how it was.
Right.
But they lived, you know, herbs were a part of life. Prayer was a part of life. Baking from scratch, cooking from scratch was a part of life. Growing your own ingredients, foraging your own ingredients, fishing, hunting. That's what I'm talking about. The rest of it is just a little like modern experiment when we came here to America. But everybody, when I bake bread, I know I'm baking it the way so many women before me baked it. So I own that.
Yes. As you should. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I don't have to be like, oh, sourdough, that's new. I don't, like, only Jill can bake with sourdough because she's a real homesteader and I'm not. You know, there's so many, like, ways to approach this.
Which makes it so, so accessible. And that's when people start to put, you know, internet is lovely, little terms and rules on homesteading. I'm like, knock it off. You don't own this. You don't own the term. Like, stop it.
People get really weird like that. They do. They want, like, to, I think it's just, like, this need to know who you are. Yeah. And so they take, you know, like they take this label, like now I call myself a homesteader. And if you don't like function within those parameters, you know, I've always been somebody who kind of likes to like defy that. Like if you're,
yeah,
if you're watching this, like I have like a lot of gold on, that's like a tie to my culture. And you might look at me and I'm from New York. I talk with my hands. I speak kind of quickly, and you might not think that like the joy of my life is family, chickens, and baking. Did we lose connection? I just
no,
got,
we're
like,
good.
Okay.
Nope, you're good.
Right, because I don't maybe fit this mold of what you think somebody who, you know, loves to garden and preserve food and think of her ancestors should quote look like, right?
Right.
Maybe yeah. I should be more plain. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but
I do love defying all the stereotypes though. Even the ones that are, you know, homesteading started off as a stereotype defier initially for modernity, and then sometimes when it gets too organized, I'm like, nope, I'm gonna break the mold again.
Yeah.
Just because you can't tell me what to do. Yeah.
Well, that's your spirit. Like that's your independent kind of self-reliant spirit, you know, like don't put me in a box.
Yep, exactly.
That's not why I started living this way. So you could just put me in another box.
Yep. Amen.
Thanks,
sister.
You're good.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No boxes here. One thing Wendell Berry talks a lot about is sense of place. And I love that concept. How does that tie in to where you are now? Like, are you in the same region that you grew up in with family, or are you did you transplant around?
Okay, this is a very...
Besides the Italy transplant. I know that's a big transplant for your parents.
So not only am I in the same place that I grew up in, I'm actually sitting right now in the house I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
When I got married, my husband and I renovated my childhood home. My father passed away more than 15 years ago, and my mother's a widow. And we renovated the house to make the bottom floor an apartment for her, so she doesn't have to go up two stairs, and it's something she always wanted. And we didn't have anywhere to live, and we just didn't know where we were going. And so it seemed like a great idea, and it has been. We did have a house upstate for a while as well. This is like our downstate space, so it's a mother-daughter. So I'm that to give you an idea, like that's how connected I am to where I grew up. I love New York. I feel a intense attachment to sense of place and home. I have lived in other places, and I've always come back because this is where I feel I belong. It's where I feel comfortable. I understand it here. I'm not a huge city person, although I have had tons of like city jobs and the corner office kind of type jobs, like crazy high power jobs. I am so fond of this idea of sense of place. And I think one of the tragedies of modern life is how the invention of the automobile made it so that our families grew further and further apart in terms of like, now you could drive, right? Now you could move an hour away because you could drive there. Now you have to work an hour and a half away because now you have a car. Right, these technological advances shift our society by like they adapt us to them. It's not the other way around. Like we kind of have this idea that we adapt technology to us, and I just don't really feel like that's how it goes. However, just as has been happening, just as happened to basically all of our ancestors, there's always politics. There's always historical shifts, the way things are run, that chase us out of our homes.
Yep.
And for me right now, I have two small children, and my husband and I are at a space where we are looking to leave New York because living here is just not sustainable in a myriad of ways. I mean, it's just like, if you're listening, it's like, if you know, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Is the best I can say. And I really resent that.
Would you states away, or do you think it would just be close-ish?
Right now we're looking.
I can feel that. It's huge.
Right. It's just kind of why I prefaced with saying, like, let me tell you how tied I actually am to where I come from. Mm-hmm. yes, to kind of show the drama in that decision. Right now we are looking at just a stay over, but if that's because of my husband's work, we need to keep in the proximity of it. But if it were up to my husband and we were able to, we'd move to where you are.
Yeah.
That's what
come on out, girl. Come on.
That's what he would love to do. And I'm just like digging my heels in like, no, not because I don't think it would be beautiful, but I'm like, I don't belong there.
It's a
that's not my place.
Different, right. And it's like a completely different culture. I was talking about that to someone the other day, just East versus West. Like truly it's very mm-hmm. different cultures. Mm-hmm. You could do it. It's just different. Very, very different. Yeah.
Very different. Yeah. And so I think that that's a really sensitive question and a great topic for today's day and age, as the pandemic also scattered a lot of people, shifted people moving from here to there. I have had a very hard time coming to a place of acceptance that, like, the place that I feel like I belong is not a place for me anymore.
Yeah.
And that is something that's been happening. Like, my parents had to come to that conclusion too.
In a huge way, for sure. Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm just whining about moving a state over right now, but they left a country, you know, left an entire language. My mother came here with just my father's side of the family. I mean, my father left like 3 days after they got married, not even. Mm. And then she came over a few months later. And she left her mother, her sisters, I mean, everybody. And she was here by herself. Now that is really, and we have this kind of euphemism that we use when we talk about immigrants. We say, you know, they left for a better life. And it really doesn't tell the story. I mean, you leave for a better life, it makes it sound like pastoral. Like, oh, we're like Sound of Music-y. Like, you know, you're skipping out. But what's underneath that is, I mean, why was my family in Southern Italy for centuries and then all of a sudden left? You know, there's a real historical, economic, political reasons that happens. And they usually revolve around persecution or starvation. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, where they were at. You just could not get ahead. You could not make a life. And I'm not going to compare where I'm at right now to where my parents were at, but it's starting to feel in New York like you can't get ahead. You can't make a life.
Yeah.
Especially if you're starting out with a family. I'm saying, if it's like this now, what's it going to be in 15 years when my kids are 15? Then what do we do?
Right. Right. And then they would be forced to probably potentially leave anyway. So
it's a great point. But one of the things that I think about is, what will be their sense of place?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It won't be the continuation of the sense of place that I have in my heart. And that makes me sad.
Yes. And that's, it's so, I see that in so many times in my life where I'll have an experience and I'm like, okay, this worked out good for me, but it's not going to be the same as my kids. And it's just, as a mom, it makes you feel really weird.
Yeah.
Like, how's that going to work for them? And I'm sure they'll be fine, but I don't know how to help them navigate that, because it's just so different.
Because it's different. And I also would love to say, you know, to give them the continuation of, like, we are third generation New Yorkers. We're fourth generation New Yorkers. You know, like, this is our home. I belong here. They don't have to, you know, wonder if it's theirs.
Right. Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't think I'm able to do that.
Yeah. Which brings me to another question. I was going to say good point. That feels awful arrogant. I have a good point. I'm going to say it right now.
You probably do have a good point, though.
I didn't mean to say it like that, audience. Don't send me emails. Oh, my gosh. We kind of already answered it. But one thing, as someone who, like, I feel like my husband and I, we're first generation everything. We're first generation homesteaders, entrepreneurs, ranchers. I'm a horsewoman. I'm a first generation of that. And it got broken, right? It was probably in the far past, but it was broken. And now so sometimes when I hear people, it happens a lot in the agricultural world around here. And it's not picking on these people at all. Cause if it was if I was in their shoes, I would totally brag on it too. But they're like, I'm sixth generation rancher. Mm-hmm. I'm fifth generation cowboy. And I'm like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. And I'm always like, you know, is that imposter thing? Do I still count? And like, where does that leave me? Am I still legit? But I think what I always come to it, and I was just thinking of it as you were talking about your kids, maybe not having that fourth generation New Yorker legacy. I'm like, okay, now it's on me. Again, so much of this homesteading life, ancestral living is that responsibility back on us. Like I get to make the legacy now. I get to be that first generation of this new thing, which is a little bit scary, a little bit disorienting, but also really cool.
That's a really great point, in fact, because you're not, if I may phrase it this way, you're not giving them nothing.
Right. Exactly.
You're giving them actually a very rich new tradition, or maybe, you know, in your case, it sounds like a circling back to a very actual, like, long ancestral tradition of living this way. And I guess if I think about it, you know, the reasons we would leave here is to give them what we feel like, those kind of traditions and way of life that we feel like we can't give them here. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of, you know, moving to give them what you think a really wonderful, like, birthright should be, like a really wonderful set of new traditions or ancestral traditions or the continuation of what kind of got dropped, you know? Because it's really hard to buy, like, land here.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's really expensive, obviously. And it's also the taxes are really high and you're not quite sure what they go to.
Sure. Yeah. So I've heard,
so not like this horror stories of like on fire, but yeah.
Right. Right. No, just like, they're like, I'm trying to buy a quarter acre and holy cow. And I'm like looking at the prices going, wow, I can't fathom. That's rough.
So, so there you go. Then your, then your life and the life of your family is shifting, right? Like now, where are our priorities? Like, or not priorities, because that sounds like judgment, but like, where's our focus? Right.
And now those are, those are hard questions to ask sometimes when you get really honest with yourself.
Yeah, like, where do we want our focus to be? Do we want it to be on trying to reach? We've done that. I mean, we've lived that way, my husband and I, where you're working on kind of keeping that status job and that status income. There's not much time for like sitting outside with your kids by the chickens.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a nice thing to do. Yeah. So priorities. I do love New York. Doesn't sound like it, but I do.
Sure. No, I think, you know, two things can be true at the same time. You can love it, but also know that it's time to go. Yeah.
Well said. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, so good. So good. I want to talk about the food a little bit because,
favorite topic.
Yeah. Like, how do you apply these principles of tradition and family and ancestral living into your kitchen?
I actually think food is the best gateway into your ancestral culture. I may be biased as an Italian, right? Like, that's a culture.
You guys have good food.
Right, like, exactly. Precisely for its food, or most importantly for its food. But I do think, you asked me earlier, you know, how can somebody kind of, who has, quote, nothing or no attachment, and that's another way. Start with food. You can learn what your ancestral culture is known for in terms of staples. Like, usually every culture has certain ingredients. I mean, you think about Italian, right? You think about garlic, basil, tomato, parsley, right? Maybe lemon, citrus. Those, in my opinion, are ancestral ingredients. They're tangible conduits to your roots. And in the kitchen, you're in a space where, like, everyone has stood before you, right? I don't know that my ancestors had an office or a living room even, but I know they had a kitchen. It may have been poor, it may have been small, but everybody cooks and everybody has to eat. And on top of that, food is so, again, in my opinion, and I know in yours, is so elemental and sacred that we're also, if we can bring in that connection to our culture, we're also kind of honoring food, right? We're honoring the blessing of it. Yeah. And one, here's an actionable step I can give you. One thing that I encourage people to do is, when you are cooking, you can use cooking as a form of connection to your ancestors, and you can use it as a form of meditation. And it's really simple. I'm really big on, part of my platform is a, kind of a tongue-in-cheek, like, no woo-woo. So, you know, like I kind of talk about woo-woo things, but I'm trying to make it for everyday people. You don't need to go out and buy new things, change the way you dress or talk. Okay. This is pretty pedestrian. One way to easily do that is if you're chopping, again, I'll just use the example of me. If you're from Southern Italian heritage and you're in the kitchen and you're chopping garlic, pretty simple. As you're chopping it, instead of wandering off the whole time thinking about your to-do list, just take a minute to think about how this ingredient has been used by so many of your ancestors, how it's been grown in your on your ancestral land, filled the bellies of so many of the people who came before you. And in just that moment, you've just connected with your ancestry. You've just rooted yourself in a sense of place. And you've also just, like, in my opinion, you've just prayed. You've just meditated for a moment. Because what are those things? They're just tools to get us to step out of the noise, right? That's just incessant noises in our heads and around us, and take a pause to connect with something deeper. So you can do that with whatever ingredients resonate with your ancestral culture or cultures. If you want to go down the rabbit hole, you can start growing those things.
That's a good rabbit hole to go down, by the way.
I agree, 100%. Yeah. You know, I harvested my garlic last, it was the end of the summer, and sat out there. I was how many months pregnant? 7-8 months pregnant at the time. And it was had all the harvest. I sat out there trying to braid it and get it all ready and cleaned up. And I could have done that really quickly. I could have done it without any thought to the fact that garlic belongs to me in this long lineage. But instead, it was just a beautiful sunny afternoon. And I felt very connected to where I come from and the people I come from. And I had grown it with my own hands, and I was preparing it with my own hands. And that brings us back to kind of what we started talking about when we started recording, which is, what does that do? Well, it makes your everyday life richer. And that's what this is all about. It just makes the chores, right? The cooking, the gardening, the preserving, it just gives it this depth. And when you feel that depth, you feel alive.
Yes. And that's what it's all about for me. Like, same, when we were talking about fear versus love, like, that's what it comes down to. And that's why I've been living this lifestyle for almost 15 years before it was cool, before it was trendy, before COVID, before all the things. And I keep coming back to it. My motivations are different. Back then, I wanted to just save money and, you know, try not to, you know, overextend our budget. And now that's not a concern as much as it used to be. But I continue to do it because I'm like, it's that grounding. It's the meditation. And there have been times in my life where I have seen the homestead stuff is, oh my gosh, just another to-do list. Out of breath. I got to get these tomatoes potted. Oh my gosh, I got to get this bread made. But when I can say, stop, Jill, stop being like ultra productive, stop trying to just check it off the list. And like you just described so beautifully, lean into it and just come at it with intention, come at it with thought. It just changes. It just changes everything. It changes the action. It changes the result. And that's why I think just as humans, we have to have this. Like, this is not something we can just throw away as a part of the past.
Yeah. I love how you just said all that. It kind of is the reminder to slow down. Like, in the act of it, whatever that it is of itself, right? It is the reminder that you need, what life is about are these kind of transcendent moments. And transcendent can be small, like in your kitchen, you know, like you're just cooking, you're just making dinner for your family. It doesn't always have to be, you know, like this huge, you've meditated for 24 hours and now you're seeing stars.
Right.
Right? Like, it's just the stepping out of the pace and the madness. Yes. And honestly, like the lie we've been sold that convenient and easy is better.
Yeah.
It's convenient and it's easy, but it doesn't equal better. If it did, we wouldn't be so emotionally and mentally and physically sick as we are.
Absolutely. Yes. Ooh. I just realized, like, we've been talking for almost an hour, which is not even, just does not seem possible.
No, but I know, it goes fast.
I want to respect your time. We're going to have to do this again, because, like, we're just going to have to do this again.
I love talking to you. It's so easy. And I keep, like, saying, like, answering your questions, and then I'm like, I can keep going, and I know you can keep going.
We could keep going all
the time. But I'm just going to stop right here. Yeah. Yeah.
You're just going to have to come to Wyoming, and we're just going to have to hang out.
I think I'm going to take you up on that.
You don't have to move here, but you can visit.
My husband would love that, honestly. Yes. He's like, he's a dreaming of Wyoming, Idaho. They sound like lovely places, honestly. I sometimes, to be honest, wish, I mean, I don't really, but I do sometimes wish I didn't have ties.
Right.
Yeah. And I could just do that.
Yep. Yep. But that's a long haul from Wyoming.
It's a
very long drive. Yeah. Driving or flying, there's really no easy way to get there. Right. Yeah. So before we sign off, could you tell everyone where to find you? And I'm not going to try to say your podcast name again, because you say it so much better than I do. American
but you
accent.
Probably, you say it as probably most people say it. Yes, I would love to. So I do have a podcast. Jill's been a guest on the podcast. It's a terrific conversation because she's awesome to speak to. Called Bella Figura, The Tradition of Living Beautifully, where I basically talk about what we've just talked about with a lot of wonderful people. So you can find that at on iTunes and Spotify. My website is bellafigurapodcast.com. I do have a Substack page, publication, I guess, called The Tradition of Living Beautifully. So you can find me over there. And I do have a love-hate relationship with Instagram, like most of us do these days.
Same.
But I am pretty active over on Instagram. And I've started doing a lot of reels where I actually just press record and talk into the camera. I've resisted doing that, but people seem to like them. And I just like pick a topic and I just say something for 90 seconds and then I post it. And it's actually kind of easy.
And if
I can get over the vulnerability.
Well, yeah. And I think people are liking the authenticity. We've all done Instagram for long enough where it's like so super staged and curated. And I'm always like, I just want to see someone real on camera saying real things. That's nice.
I think this could be a whole other topic, by the way, what you just said. I think we're hitting an age on social and technology where it's almost like the uninfluencer phase.
Yes. Yes. You know? The shift right now is fascinating. It is fascinating.
I think that's what's happening. Like, enough of your perfectly staged, aspirational life. Show me the real and the behind the scenes kind of thing. Yeah. Like the real behind the scenes. Or and just be vulnerable and honest. So I'm over there at Dolores_Alfieri_Taranto. I should probably come up with a more succinct handle, but
we'll put
I
it
am.
In the show notes, guys.
Okay, so perfect. On it.
Don't worry about spelling it. We'll put it in the show notes. So, well, Dolores, thank you so much. Doesn't seem sufficient to even say it like that, but this is always a pleasure. Let's definitely stay in touch, keep doing things in the future because, we're on the same wavelength. And while I do preach about being, around people who come from all walks of life and all viewpoints, when you find your people, it just is really nice. And so this has been a joy. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Jill. This has been just a wonderful conversation. I feel inspired.
Me too.